Today I want to talk about canonical models. So what this means is that given a Shimura datum, so a reductive group of a Q plus a conjugacy class of homomorphisms, first thing I want to do is I want to define a number field, which is called the reflex field. That's going to be the field that the canonical model is defined over. And then, so the claim is going to be that the Shimura variety, this big family of varieties, actually has a model over this field. But as probably everyone knows, but if you have a variety over the complex numbers, has a model over some subfield, we usually have lots of models. We just take the simple example of x squared plus y squared plus z squared, this projective curve, then certainly it has a model over Q, but it has infinitely many models over Q, non-isomorphic models over Q. So the first statement is that the claim is that this actually has a model over this field, and the second thing is we can write down some conditions on the model so that it's canonical. So canonical means satisfies some conditions that determine it uniquely. So that's what we'll do today. First of all, we'll define this field, and then we'll write down some conditions. And we'll see tomorrow they determine it uniquely, then we'll see how to construct the models. So recall that we have, so if we have G, the reductive group over Q, and we have X consists of homomorphisms from C cross to GR, and the correct way to think of this, in fact, is that there is a torus. There's a torus over R, and H, in fact, is a map from the torus into the group, algebraic group over R. So rather than thinking of these as a map of topological Lie groups, one should really think of it as a group of map of algebraic groups. This is the torus, the two-dimensional torus over R with there's an obvious one with S equal to C cross. And then we can, this is a map of tori, a map of algebraic groups, excuse me, over R. So we can go up to SC, up to C, and we get a map of algebraic groups over C. And this decomposes into a product of two copies of GM. And this map here we call mu H. So given a homomorphism here, we get a co-character of G over the complex numbers. And it's obvious that if I take a conjugate of H, I get a conjugate of mu. So from the X gives me, let me write it, Cx. So this is a, what this is a GC. So I take the GC conjugacy class containing all these mu H's. Class of co-characters. So in other words, homomorphisms from GM to G over the complex numbers. And the Lean definition of the reflex field is it's the field of this definition of this conjugacy class. So I'll explain what that means as you write it down. EGX is the field of definition. Of this conjugacy class. So literally what this means is that if you take a, so this is a map, both GM and G are defined over Q. So if I have an automorphism of the complex numbers, I can apply it to any homomorphism like this. I get another homomorphism like this. And so I can look at the automorphisms of the complex numbers that stabilize this conjugacy class. So what this means is that EGX is the fixed field. Of the automorphisms of C stabilizing CX. In other words, if you take one mu, you apply an automorphism of complex numbers to it, then it'll fix EGX if and only if sigma mu is GC conjugate to mu. That's the definition. People look very puzzled. Any questions? Oh, you should look puzzled because the definition is not very illuminating. So the point is, given the X, we get a conjugacy class of co-characters like this. So if you like, CX belongs to, we're looking at homomorphisms over the complex numbers from GM to GC, and then we're dividing up by GC, so CX is in here. What's not at all obvious what sort of thing this field is, whether it's a number field or some other thing. So the way to try and start to understand what this field is as follows. So if we choose we fix a maximal torus. So everybody should be familiar with maximal tori and stuff now. Maximal torus S in G over the complex numbers. And then you see if I take a mu in CX, then mu GM is a torus in G, it'll be contained inside a maximal torus, but one of the fundamental theorems is that over an algebraically closed field, any two maximal tori are conjugate. So if I take a mu in here, then this is a torus, so I can conjugate it and get it into my fixed torus. So we see that the co-characters, so every conjugacy class of characters into G has a representative in my fixed S. So this is onto. Every conjugacy class of co-characters here has a representative here. And if you work a little harder, it's fairly easy to see that. If you have two co-characters here, when do they become conjugate here? Well, it turns out they have to be conjugate by something in the normalizer of S. Well, the normalizer of S, modulo S, is the viral group. So, in fact, you get a bijection across here. That's already starting to look a little better. So. And now the point is that I could have chosen my maximal, S contained in G over Q bar rather than over the complex numbers, and I have the same picture. So this is, so I could have started off with a maximal torus in here and then looked at it over GC, and then I would have the point is that on the left-hand side, nothing actually changes when you go from one algebraically closed field to a bigger algebraically closed field. This group here is just isomorphic to Z to the dimension of S. And the same is true here. So for Torii, if you have Torii over an algebraically closed field, then you don't get any more homomorphisms from one to the other when you go to a bigger algebraically closed field. So and the Weyl group doesn't change, nothing changes. So this is actually equal to this. So the upshot of this rather easy argument just basically just uses that two maximal Torii conjugate is that there's a bijection from here. In other words, every conjugacy class over the complex numbers has a representative over Q bar. And any two representatives down here are actually conjugate down here. So the conjugacy class that we're interested in actually lives down here. And then now we don't, well, now we can, so we actually have our Cx lies in here. Cx actually lies in here. So we can take that to be our Cx and just say it's a, so it's a fixed field of the sigma belonging to Galois group of Q bar over Q stabilizing Cx. Okay, so the so at least it's a number field. Because if I take anything in the conjugacy class, it's going to be defined over a finite extension. So what? Well. Well, that's true. Let me see. So, once G itself will split over a finite extension of Q. I mean, this whole argument that I gave here only assumed that the group was split, meaning it has a split tor- a maximal split torus. And that will happen over a finite extension of Q. Yeah, I guess that's the best way of saying it. Well, I want to say more. So, for example, so I'll write down a bunch of examples. So if G is actually equal to T, which is a torus, then H. So H gives us a mu H, which is a co-character of the torus. And then in this case, EGH is just the field of definition of the co-character. So here we have a map from this torus to this torus over the complex numbers, it will be defined over Q bar. In fact, it will be defined over some number field. And an example of this, suppose we have a CM type, so a CM field and a CM type on it. Now, because E is a CM field, when you tensor it with Q over R, this will become isomorphic to C to the G. But the CM type actually gives us an isomorphism, canonical isomorphism to a product of copies of C degenerate indexed by phi. So this is a map that sends E R, say, to, and the phi-th component, it's C C E R. So if we have the torus TE, then TER is just E tensor R cross. So this is, there's an isomorphism of this with C cross the upper C index, copies of C indexed by phi. And you get an H phi from C cross, obviously goes to that, just sends Z diagonally. This is a diagonal map. And so we get a map here. So this is my H phi. H phi is a map from C cross to here, which when you go down to here just gives you the diagonal map. And, well, you can read in the notes or you can check yourself that the, that, so this is the reflex field. That the two notions of reflex field coincide, so the reflex field of TE H phi is what I was writing E star last week. That's trivial, actually. But I'll let you check it. And if G is an adjoint group, you can give a description of the reflex field in terms of Dynkin diagrams. So again, it's already in the notes. You can see that this argument here is starting to get head towards Dynkin diagrams. I mean, what do you do when you want a Dynkin diagram? You choose a maximal torus. And in fact, what you should do is you should start off with by choosing a maximal torus. You can choose a maximal torus defined over Q, and then when you go up to Q bar, the Galois group will act on the Dynkin diagram of the group, and you can describe the reflex field in terms of the action of the Galois group on the Dynkin diagram of G. And it turns out that the reflex field will either be totally real. So on any particular case, you can just work it out, totally real or a CM field, or quadratic imaginary, totally imaginary extension of a totally real field. The fourth remark is that if G is arbitrary, so we have a GX, then we have a torus, which is the maximal, the quotient of G by its derived group, which we always write nu. And if you take any H in here, when you compose it with nu, you get a, well, if you get a, when you compose it with nu, you get something into TR. And this one doesn't depend on the choice of this one. Any two of them are conjugate, but this is an abelian quotient of this, so conjugating vanished. This, you can't see it when you go to the quotient. So if you start with a Shimura datum, you get two Shimura data out of it. We've seen this. You take the adjoint group. We discussed this a bit. And you just, well, you get a map from G to G ad. and you get an X from that, and you get a Shimura datum here, and it turns out, well, you can check rather easily that this, in fact, is just the composite of these two fields. Yeah, I should say that every redacted group is almost a product of a semi-simple group and a torus. And this map from here to the product of these two things has a finite kernel. Now, the finite, of course, is not a product in the finite kernel. The fact that it's not a product is crucially important. But the point is that in terms of reflex fields, it just behaves as if it was the product of an adjoint group, semi-simple group and a torus. So the upshot is that, this you can understand pretty well. You just have a torus and a co-character of it, and just looking for the field of definition of the co-character. This you can understand in terms of the Dinkin diagram and the action of the Galois group on the Dinkin diagram. So the reflex field is something you can compute in any particular case. There's one last example, which I should mention, and that is that if you're in the PEL case, so just in the PEL case AC, which is a nice case, remember, I won't go through it in detail, but if you remember in this case we had a simple algebra over Q, and we had a trace map. Where did it act? I think it acted. Yeah, so I think actually it was C, I think. Yeah, then what I'm claiming is that in this case, the reflex field is just the field generated by over Q by the traces of things with B belong to B. So it's analogous to what we had in this case here. It's the field generated by the traces. So that's the reflex field. Now the next thing we need is a notion of a special point. So the way we're going to characterize the canonical model amongst all other possible models is we're going to decree that certain points on the Shimura variety are special. And we're going to call the model canonical if automorphisms of the complex number act in a specific way on the special points. So we have the Shimura datum, Gx, and we'll call X belong to X, special. Yeah. I didn't mention it in the lectures, but I always tend to think of X, instead of thinking of X as itself a conjugacy class, I often tend to think of it as a set parameterizing a conjugacy class. So I tend to think of an X in here, then HX, X is just some set, and HX attached to it there's a homomorphism from here to GC, to GR. So we'll call this special if there exists a torus T contained in G, so that means that it's a torus defined over Q, such that nature of C cross is contained in the real points of the torus. So again, what does this mean? Well, obviously it's a rather strong condition. If you have a homomorphism from C cross into GR, why should it belong, have points in a torus, which is actually defined over Q? Well, in the case of GL2, the classical case, and you take X, it can be identified with the upper and lower half planes, then how do you get rational tori inside GL2? One way is to, if you take E to be a field of degree 2 over Q, and you choose a basis, for E, so you write this Q plus Q tau, say, then if you let E act by multiplication on this, then you get a map from E into M to Q, and you get a torus sitting inside here. So that's a good way of constructing tori inside GL2. And it turns out that the, again, this calculation is done in the notes, it's not very difficult, that the special points are the points tau, correspond to the points tau in the complex double space, such that Q tau, this is of degree 2, so this is a quadratic imaginary field because it's not on the real line. So the special points correspond exactly to the points here which generate a quadratic extension of Q. And the torus to which the corresponding H factors is precisely the one corresponding to Q. Q tau. So, yeah?
How can Q tau over Q not be equal to 2? When your E over Q is 2 and E is 2.
Well,
isn't EQ a joint tau then?
No, wait a minute, excuse me. So, forget. Forget this for a second. So the special points are the points in the complex double space. Call them tau. Well, let's call it Z if you like. And everybody will be happy. Okay, so then so the special points are the point Z in the double space with this property. So there are a lot of them, but there are a lot that don't have, a lot of complex numbers don't have this property as well. And the point I wanted to make is that there's an H corresponding to this, and it the rational torus it factors through is this one here with the Z equal to the tau. That's worked out in the notes. But it's an exercise if you. So there are a lot of special points, but they're rather, and in some sense there's a lot of them, but there's only countably many of them, in fact. Okay. So those are the special points, and if you are really interested in the Z, but, well, into the X, so if this is special, we talk about a special pair. So. A special pair is a special point of X together with a torus defined over Q such that this condition holds. So those are the special points. So now I need a construction. Right, so. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a good point you make. I mean, that are always special points. Yes, there are always lots of special points. Maybe I'll say a little more about that tomorrow. It's important for us that there are lots of special points. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not at all obvious that there are any special points, but I guess there is a reasonably short argument that there are special points. But we'll see tomorrow that, in fact, there are lots of them. And it's a key point that there are lots of them, because they're going to try and characterize our canonical models in terms of themselves. There are no special points to be no. There's going to be one condition for each special point, so if there are no special points, there'll be no conditions. So that's a good point. There do exist special points. So I need one construction, then I can define what we mean by a canonical model. So suppose I have a torus defined over Q. And suppose I have a field of finite degree. If I have a map, say an embedding of rho into Q bar, then from that I get a map from TE to TQ bar. Okay, obviously a point here gives me a point there. And the observation I want to make is that if I take a point here, P, and I take the, I don't know whether to take the sum or the product. This is an abelian group, so I can take a product, so sum, I'll call it sum. So if I take the sum, so I have a point here. If I take the sum over all the embeddings of E into Q bar of rho P, so this is something in TQ bar. I claim this is stable under the action of the Galois group of Q bar over Q. So I have an automorphism of the complex numbers, and I apply it to this, then I just permute the rows. So I put a sigma in here. Sigma is an automorphism of Q bar. I just permute the rows, and therefore I don't change this. So this actually lies in part of this fixed time of the action of the Galois group of Q bar over Q. So this is actually TQ. That's the first observation. So I get a map from TE to, I have a finite extension of Q, and I get a map from here to TQ. It just sends P to sigma rho P, which a priori is in here, but we see it actually lies in here. That's the first observation. Now we can go one step further. So if I take a T over Q, suppose I have a co-character now, co-character is usually defined over some extension. So it's defined over some extension where, again, E over Q is a finite extension of Q. Then I can do the same sort of thing. If I look at the points in E, then I get a map from E cross defined by mu into the points in T over E. And then I get a map from here down to TQ. Which is the one I just defined. So I have a well-defined map from E cross to TQ. Now, the final observation in these constructions is that I can do the same thing of the Ardels. So let me write it down and say. So certainly, mu is the homomorphism of Torii, so it maps the Ardelic points here to the Ardelic points here. Here, for the moment, I really do mean all the Ardels, so not just the finite ones. So I get here. Here there's no problem. And I claim that we can play the same game as we did up here, and we can go down to the Ardels over Q. The only difference is it's slightly more complicated. Rather than taking Q bar up there, you have to take a finite extension, replace Q bar by a finite extension. So a priori, what this is doing is this is again the sum of rho, the embeddings of E into the Q bar, rho of mu A. Except that we should think of the embeddings as being embeddings into, so we should take some finite Galois extension, some big enough one. Look at the embeddings in here. And a priori, where we're ending up in is in T AK, so let's take this to be some big Galois, finite Galois extension, big, rather than Q bar, because people don't like to think of the Ardels over Q bar. So if we make this construction, then a priori, we take the sum of these things, we end up in TAK, but it's something in here which is fixed under the action of the Galois group of K over Q, so it actually lies in TQ, TAQ. So you can simply do this by hand. Alternatively, you can check that this actually is a map of Torii. From this torus to that, this there's a map of Torii from here to here, which gives this map and gives this map. But we only need it in these two cases, so we might as well write it down by hand. Is that okay? So the same idea. This mu should give us a map here. If we look at all the maps from E into some big Galois extension of Q, a priori, these maps are going to take us into here, but the Galois group of K over Q acts on this thing and actually ends up in here. Okay, so now we're ready to. Yeah, well, this is convenient. So I want to apply this construction in the case that we have here, that we have a special peer. So we're in the situation here. So write Ex for the reflex field. In other words, equal to field of definition. Of mu x. So this is mu hx. The point is that the hx goes into T, so this in fact is a Schumacher datum, if you like, of its own right. So it's a field of So we have an HX which is going into TR, so we get a mu X which is going into TC, and that will actually be defined over a number field. Then if you apply this construction here, then in this situation we get a map from the Ardels to the so we want to do the T of the Ardels of Q, and then we just want to project that down to the finite Ardels. This is just project. Forget the infinite factor. So this is a map I defined on the left-hand blackboard. This one here. And then we just project down to here. And this is the map I want to call Rx. So the upshot of all these constructions are is that for a given a G and X, or a given a special point, that means that Hx factors through the real points of a Q torus. Then I get a map from the field of definition of the mu x from the Ardels of the Edels, I should say, of the field of definition of the mu x into the just the TAF over here. And I used to think this was obvious, but you worried me, so. Anyway, it's true that EX contains EGX. The mu X is in this conjugacy class. And so mu X is actually in CX. And I think the Galois group fixing this is smaller than the Galois group stabilizing that. Just I hope so. So this is the definition of a special point. For every special point, and we choose a torus. The torus doesn't, which torus we take doesn't matter too much, but we take one, and we get this map across here, which we call Rx. Okay. So now we come back to our Chamorro variety. So a Chamorro variety, remember what it is. So it's an inverse system of varieties over the complex numbers. So these are compact open subsets of GAF. And there's an action of GAF on the system. GAF doesn't act on any individual variety, but it acts on the whole system. And remember, this is just as a point set, it's GQ cross X cross GAF. And this, I mean, a set of all compact. The skip K is a set of full compact open subgroups of GAF. Now the model, by a model of model M equal MK, of the Chamorro variety over EGX, I just mean what you probably expect, namely, it's an inverse system of varieties over EGX, which becomes equal to that over the complex number. So this is an inverse system of varieties indexed by the same set K, plus an action of GAF. So this is, everything is defined over EGX. The varieties are defined over EGX. And if I have something in here, it gives a map from one of these things to another one in the system, and it's defined over EGX as well. And the point is that when we take this thing over EGX, EGX is a subfield of the complex numbers, remember. We go back up to the complex numbers, we just recover this. So as an inverse system plus action of GAF. So that's what I mean by a model. Yeah? NK is a variety over EGX.
And how does K matter?
Huh?
So
the variety
over EGX, why? What does
that have to do with K? This K, well, that's the index set. Yeah. I mean, up here we have, of the complex numbers, we have one variety for each compact open subset of GAF. So I want, correspondingly, I want, well, this is supposed to be a model of that. Okay. So for each, this is a variety of EGX, which becomes equal to this one when we go up to the complex numbers. But more than that, when k prime is contained in k, I get a map from the k prime one to the k one. And I'm supposed to get a map from the k prime one here to the k one. And when I go up to the complex number, that's supposed to give me that one back. So, and then if I have something in GAF, it gives a map from this variety to this variety here. And when I go up to the complex numbers again, it's supposed to give me the one we had before up here. So the point is, I don't want to just consider these varieties one by one. I want to consider the whole caboodle. So it's an inverse system of varieties of the complex numbers indexed by k plus an action here. And then I want a model of the whole thing of EGX. In other words, I have one, each variety here has a model, each map is a map of the corresponding things here, which gives you that one back when you go to the complex numbers. So a model of this over EGX is an inverse system over EGX plus an action of GAF, which gives me back the original one when I go back to the complex numbers. Now the condition, so when is it special? That's the point. When is it canonical? Excuse me. When will we say it's the correct one? Well, we write down the condition. So the condition is that, suppose we have X belong to X special. And suppose we have A belong to GAF. When I do this, I get a point, which I'll write here, belonging to this double coset space, okay, obviously. In other words, the complex points of this. So these are just the complex. So suppose I have a model. What I'm doing now is putting a condition on it, which will mean that it's canonical. So suppose we do have that model. Then this is just the complex points of this. By definition, this is a variety. This is a variety defined over EGX, which becomes equal to this one when we got the complex numbers. Okay. So there's going to be a condition every time I have an X which is special, and every time an A have an A in here, then the condition is that XAK, well, it's a point on a variety defined over EGX, which is a number field. So the condition is that it has, first condition is actually has coordinates. Its coordinates are in the complex numbers, but we can talk about having coordinates in EX. The maximum will be an extension of EX. So rather than having complex coordinates, it actually has coordinates which are algebraic numbers. In fact, algebraic numbers which generate the Boolean extension of EX. EX is the reflex field attached to X. And moreover, I'll write down an equation. The condition is that this holds. That I'll write it down and say what everything means. This is X. So here, sigma belongs to the Galois group of EX, EB over EX. And remember, on Friday, I guess, we had a map from, when I did this brief introduction, brief review of class field theory, we had a map from here, which was AE cross, this is the reciprocity map. There'd be an X in here. And so this equation should hold whenever sigma belongs in here and S belongs to here and it maps to sigma. And it should hold for all K as well. So every special point, every idyllic point here, and every compact open subgroup of GAF, I have a condition. And we'll say that the model is special if this condition holds for everything. So the condition is that So mostly what's happening is we have some particular special points. And we're saying that these points have coordinates in a field, so we can start to make sense to say how the Galois group, how automorphism, the complex numbers act on them, because we can describe this Galois group using class field theory. So first of all, for these special points, this point has coordinates in an Abelian extension of EX. It's particularly algebraic, not transcendental. And if I take a sigma in the Galois group of the maximum Abelian extension of EX over EX, then sigma acts on this according to this rule, where RxS is the thing over there. The thing on the right makes sense because you see RxF is in TAF, which is contained in GAF. So the That's the condition. So this is what a model is. It's this whole thing is defined over, the whole system is defined over EK, over EG, over the reflex field. And we'll say that the model is canonical if these particular points behave, belong in these particular fields, and the Galois groups in this action in this particular fashion. Yeah, the whole thing is supposed to hold for every. Yeah. The torus is not too relevant, actually. You can see it whichever way you want. Well, like for one torus for each special point, or for all tori for each special point, it doesn't matter. If it holds for one, you can take the smallest torus or the biggest torus, it doesn't matter, yeah. The torus is sort of irrelevant. I mean, you have to have it in there when it states, but it doesn't matter which one you take, yeah. So I suppose you can say it for all special pairs, if you like, but it doesn't, as I say, it doesn't really matter. Given the X, it doesn't matter which T you take. Okay, so that's the definition. So, what's the theorem? So the theorem says that canonical models always exist. And they're unique. Unique up to unique isomorphism, maybe. So in other words, so I guess this is the fundamental theorem, that given a Shimura datum, you get the system of, first of all, you get a system of complex manifolds over the, just a system of complex manifolds, some inverse system with fraction GF. And using the Bailey-Borel theorem and the Borel theorem, you see that these complex manifolds are, in fact, algebraic varieties in a unique fashion, and the maps and the inverse system and the action of GF are all algebraic maps. And what this theorem here is saying is that, in fact, this whole system and all these maps are defined in some unique way over some specific number field. So I actually managed to finish on time today. So for the next two lectures, at least, I'll try and explain why this is true.